Steven, have you ever been to Gettysburg?
I have not been to Gettysburg. I was actually trying to think if I've ever been to Pennsylvania. I don't think I have.
Wow, that's a big state.
Yeah, but it's kind of far away from me.
It's not like just right above you. I don't know where states are.
No. I'm closer to Mexico than you think.
I also don't know where your state is, honestly.
That's fine. You know,
I could probably draw a picture of it. I know it's like long and skinny.
Yes.
And it has kind of like that little like hat brim at one end.
Mm-hmm. No, that's Oklahoma.
Oh, wait. No, Oklahoma is the one that looks like a meat cleaver.
Okay. Geography, right? By somehow I manage. We're bad at it.
I've definitely been to Pennsylvania a whole bunch because, sure. I mean, you can barely leave New York without accidentally driving into Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So it's there. I'm pretty sure I went on like a school trip or something. I don't know. They always try and bring you to like historical important places.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've been there, like Colonial Williamsburg, like all the, you know, New England things.
Yeah, we do that here, but they're all Civil War sites. So there's that.
I mean, isn't Gettysburg this?
Yeah,
simple?
But like.
War?
The other side type.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
I was trying to say it, but not say it because
the losers, the loser side.
That's right.
Sorry.
Can
I say that?
Apologize for how like, the Civil War ended.
I mean, like, is it too soon to like make fun of?
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, we are talking about the episode Gettysburg, Season 8, Episode 8, originally airing on November 17th, 2011. We have a cold open, and then we have a very clear A and B plot in this episode.
Yeah.
So let's jump in. Oh my God, Steven, I'm in labor.
Oh no, let's rush to the hospital.
I know it's wrong to fake going into labor just to get out of things, but sometimes it's necessary.
Wait, is that a water bottle on the floor?
Oh, wait, no, I just spilt my Poland Spring. Never mind. Clever, Pam. I like it.
Is it? She okay, so I made a list of things she tries to get out of by faking labor. Gabe's super boring meeting. And then a bunch of paperwork from Angela. And then a conversation with Phyllis. And then a conversation with Ryan.
I'm going into labor.
Should I have corn dogs? I mean,
I'm going into labor.
Okay, three reasons you are wrong about True Blood. Number one.
I'm going into labor.
Yeah, people aren't having it.
Yeah, they don't believe her. She's cried labor too many times.
That's right. It's sort of the opposite of her first pregnancy because, remember, Pam didn't want to go to the hospital and they waited really to the very last minute. This time she can't wait to get out of the office.
I mean, this entire pregnancy is the opposite of the first pregnancy, which is pretty great. I do like this bit. I love the little montage of her going through in this cold open, saying that she is in labor and everyone getting increasingly bored with it. And then the final of, oh no, my water broke. And it was just a water bottle taped to her leg. Very.
Who hasn't done that?
I mean, we've all tried.
Yeah. And this is the last time we'll see Jenna Fisher for a while, because again, this coincided with her real life pregnancy. And so we will be spending more time with Kathy as the episodes move forward.
Yeah, Kathy is in this episode, but she's just kind of like in the background and we almost never hear from her.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like that they had her here. Like they had her in the episode, but we didn't need to see much more of her. She just kind of like fell to the background. So I enjoyed the way they did that.
Yeah, I don't think she has any lines, but we see her sort of just in the mix. And yeah, I like that too. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. She's going to be Pam's replacement. She's working on some stuff, I guess. She's at Andy's old desk currently with the clump with Stanley and Phyllis. She will try to move later on. But keeping an eye on Kathy.
So Andy's main goal for this episode is he wants to inspire everyone in the office. He's still on this kick trying to like find new clever ways to be the manager and motivate people. And he does this whole he does a bit about how business is war and how he can find a way to translate that into a trip to Gettysburg.
I am a leader. But you can only inspire people so much in a place like this. So today, I'm turning the inspire factor up to 10 with a little help from my friend, America's Bloodiest Battle.
So So he has a bus waiting downstairs, and he announces to the office that they're all going to go on a trip, but only half the office end up joining him and the other half stay behind. And that's how we get our A plot, where we have the group over at Gettysburg, and then we have the B plot of the group staying behind back at the office.
Yeah. It's reminiscent of the lunch groups. Remember when Robert would take half a group out and half the group got stuck behind the office and they had his list? I don't think that was Andy's intention. I think Andy's intention was everybody would go, but because he couldn't force them to go, we end up with a sort of a similar situation. But the mix of people is a little bit different, which I think is fun.
Yeah, and I like that Andy doesn't force them. I feel like a Michael Scott plot, the same idea, he would have forced everybody onto the bus and we would have been like, you know, the full cast going off to Gettysburg. But Andy has a much, he's more of a pushover, really, is what it comes down to. And the people who were adamant about not going got to stay back behind.
I mean, I can't force you to go. You're not my slaves, thanks to Gettysburg. But who's coming with me?
I'm in.
I'm in too.
I guess I'm a sucker for historical fiction.
Anyone who's not going, you're dead to me. You're uninvited. I don't want you to come. But FYI, there will be leftover turkey and pesto sammies in the fridge.
Yes.
So very clear A and B plots, which is nice. You know, we've talked about some of the episodes recently. It's been really hard to sort of separate them out. And this one is like half the people are on a field trip. They're doing this thing. And there's some people left behind. And I would say we start with those who stayed in the office.
Okay, great.
Maybe we talk about that. Mix it up.
So the people who do stay behind, at first they start just kind of goofing off for the day since there's no one there managing them. There's no, you know, really repercussions for not working. But instead, Robert California shows up unannounced that day and surprises them all and decides to kind of get going an impromptu brainstorming session since Andy wasn't there, that's who he was showing up to talk to. And instead, he calls this group the Free Thinkers for not going on the trip and asks them all to come up with some new ideas to pitch to him in the conference room later that day.
So here's what we can do. Game changers. Changes to the game such that the game can never be played the same way again. Everyone, brainstorm some innovations. Don't be afraid to get weird with it.
He's not super clear about the scope of these ideas, but it is supposed to be about what Dunder Mifflin can and should be doing. Just a quick roll call. The people that stayed are Ryan, Kelly, Pam, Kevin, Stanley, Meredith, Angela, and Kathy.
We then get a wonderful scene of them all in the conference room, and each person kind of stands up to pitch their idea one by one to Robert California.
Ryan goes first, and this is a continuation of Ryan struggling to know where he stands with Robert California.
Robert, you got your sheep? And you got your black sheep, and I'm not even a sheep. I'm on the freaking moon.
You know, I think with Michael, and to a lesser degree, right until the handcuffs went on, David Wallace, Ryan has been able to impress his bosses, and he has not made any headway with Robert California. And this idea doesn't really help. So he makes this sort of long-winded pitch about how, you know, if you could go back 30 years and start a sushi business, you would be just super wealthy today because sushi is really popular. Well, as a paper company, we should look at that same culture and we should look at origami. And maybe if we get into origami paper in 30, you know, that'll be the next big thing.
Origami. It's the sushi of paper.
And it's is not a winner of an idea.
This idea hasn't gripped me. What else did you come up with?
Well, I had to memorize the presentation, Robert, and it took a long time to build the swan, so.
That was bad.
I do like his analogy of origami being the sushi of paper.
Yeah, and his pitch has some like internal rhyming and stuff, and he had to memorize it, so he didn't have time for another idea, but your boy Robert shoots it down pretty quickly.
Yeah. And next up, we have Stanley, who pitches Paper, P-A-P-Y-R, which is paper for women because it's scented and soft.
Paper. Paper for women. It's pink, scented, and silky soft. Now you can watch the game, and she can write a letter to her sister.
And he pitches this whole scenario of a wife being very upset when her husband comes home from work because her paper is too rough and scratchy.
The situation you described, returning home to a wife complaining about her paper being too masculine, is not one I'm familiar with.
Not a great idea. Robert goes to shoot this down, and Stanley makes a comment about how, well, you know, it's a thing in his community as a person of color, and Robert's like, no.
In the African-American community.
No.
Then we have Pam, who starts with an idea about test booklets and, you know, maybe we could use those as a way for advertising, but then she sort of trails off and she's like, oh, I've got to go to the restroom, and it sort of leaves.
And as, you know, as I tell it, I don't like it. Unless, of course, you're responding to it.
I am not.
Excuse me, I'm going to go to the bathroom.
And then finally, we have Kevin, and he pitches this idea about cookies in the vending machine and cookie placement. No one's really clear, but Robert California kind of latches onto it as a metaphor for the business and pushing, you know, high demand products. And he translates it into like this business talk from the cookies.
Well, you know how in the vending machine they have the chocolate chip cookies in the A1 spot? They do that because they think A1's the best spot for the best cookie. But the real best spot is D4, right? That's where the eyes go. So,
cookies. Cookie placement.
Yeah, but not just the cookies, though. That was just a for instance.
Who else agrees with Kevin that we're wasting facilities, manpower on our underselling products when we should be pushing our top performers?
I could see where he gets there because, like, I've heard all of that, like, corporate jargon. Like, it's, you know, put it in the parking lot. Like, they say things that don't mean what they are. And then just, like, we all kind of, like, blanket put this idea onto something that's... It was a whole mess, but Robert California loved it because he was reading into it way more than Kevin intended. And he even asked the room, like, who agrees with this? And everyone slowly raises their hand.
Okay, we are now on a planet where Kevin is the most creative person around. And I am just some good-looking guy.
And then later on, we see this conversation with Robert California and Kevin, where Kevin is like trying to hold on to this idea that Robert California thinks he is saying a lot more than he really is saying. I mean, they go into like discussion of hedge funds, and yeah, Kevin's totally a fish out of water, but he is playing along just enough to keep Robert California on the hook here.
And why is BlackRock suddenly the paragon by which all hedge funds must now be compared?
I don't know.
Right? I mean, you're an accountant. Those bogus prospectuses must drive you insane.
Yes, I am an accountant.
This isn't the first time that a new manager slash boss thought Kevin was the intelligent one in the office. We saw this previously with D'Angelo, right? I believe it was a D'Angelo plot.
Yes. Yeah.
And so Kevin tends to come off as like the pseudo intelligence. And then we really see that there's no substance behind most of it.
And this really bugs Ryan, who I guess was proud of his idea. But again, is trying to like figure out where he stands with this new guy. And he is just infuriated that Kevin has this standing with Robert and that Robert is listening to him. And Ryan, I think he actually plays it in a pretty clever way. So Robert California and Kevin are talking. Again, Kevin is like just hanging on enough to sort of sort of make this work.
Never trust a cookie with a woman's name.
That's some advice, I guess. I haven't really ever thought about that.
Never trust a cookie with a woman's name. Pecan Sandy, Lorna Doone, Madeline. Oh, they'll just break your heart.
Ryan comes in and says, hey, I have this Big Mac idea. And Kevin's like, no, that's my idea. You stole it. And so he gets Kevin to explain this idea, which is every time you buy a Big Mac from McDonald's, you set one ingredient aside. So I guess on Monday, you set aside the patty, and Tuesday, you set aside the tomato, and Wednesday, you set aside the bun.
You'd go patty first?
I don't know.
That's a long time to sit around for a patty.
Yeah, but like you don't want a tomato to sit around for 5 days either. Cut, you know.
Mm.
There's, I mean, none of this is good. This is the point.
Well, so a Big Mac is two all beef patties. So does that mean like each day you need to set aside one patty?
Maybe.
Hmm. That's a lot of days. That is like a whole week worth of like ingredients just waiting.
Yeah.
Big Mac idea sounds encouraging.
It's really, really good, Robert. Let me explain.
No, this is not fair. This is my idea. He's trying to steal it because he's jealous of me.
Well, what is the idea?
Every time you buy a Big Mac, you set one ingredient aside. Then, at the end of the week, you have a free Big Mac. And you love it even more because you made it with your own hands.
You know what? Now I remember. That was your idea. That is 100% your idea.
Robert realizes what's happened.
Oh, my. It was just actually cookies the whole time.
And that Robert sees that he's put all this meaning into what Kevin was saying that wasn't there. It's like Kevin was just saying something about the vending machines, but Robert in his mind turned it into some sort of parable about business. And honestly, I think Ryan did a pretty good job at disarming that, or, you know, dismantling it.
It's like he got to reveal the true nature of Kevin to Robert California without having it look bad on him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like I said, well played. I mean, Ryan is still Ryan, but
hey, just because you have a few wins doesn't mean you're still not kind of a tool.
True.
So yeah, that kind of brings the end to the Robert California B plot back at the office. And in the meantime, we have everyone traveling over to Gettysburg. Andy has rented a bus, so they're all on the bus, and at first they start watching a movie. What are they watching?
They're going to watch Limitless.
Isn't that the one where the guy becomes limitless?
Which stars Bradley Cooper, who, of course, Ed Helms has been in movies in.
So they watch Limitless on the bus ride over, and everyone is very highly engaged in watching the movie and doesn't want to get off the bus once it does arrive at Gettysburg.
You guys! Get excited!
Shh, movie's almost over.
Andy hands out some very brightly colored tour hats. I'm not sure what that's in reference to, but later on in the episode, Jim implies that it might be something sexual, and they've been wearing these bright pink hats with it on their head all day.
I'm wearing a very pink hat. I've been getting weird looks all day because I'm pretty sure DM does GB means something kind of sexual.
Yeah, and this is interesting because I think on the surface, this episode feels a little bit like what if Andy were Michael Scott? Like you even said it earlier, right? Like Michael would make everybody go. But I think what's a little bit different here is that Andy, while the premise that business is war and we're going to battle, like all that sort of whatever, he is prepared for it in a way that I don't think Michael Scott ever could have been. He stops Jim from going to the visitor center. Like Andy has done his research and he's going to do a tour and like he knows where he wants to take people. And so while this is a little like Michael Scottian in terms of feeling, I feel like in execution, Andy's doing a better job at this than Michael ever could have.
Yeah, and Andy is very prepared, and he has a goal here. His goal is to try and reunite everyone in the office and get them motivated and all kind of on the same team to, you know, with his analogy to war, to like fight in order to like make better sales and have better numbers and feel like the camaraderie is driving the force of this business. And he is being the leader, you know, as the new manager. And through everything in this episode, yeah, they're like walking around and some of them get tired. They are a little bit listless, like they don't quite know where they're supposed to be going, even though Andy is trying to like trudge them through this battlefield and get them motivated. Andy displays a flag at one point that they're all supposed to unite and fight under. And really what it comes down to is it comes down to this moment where Andy gets angry at Jim because everyone is like mostly complaining about this trip and how it's not working out. And Andy kind of calls Jim out on yucking his yum.
Yeah.
Our office has a disease, and it goes by many names. Sarcasm, snark, wise cracks. You take things that people care about, and you make them feel lame about it with your jokes. That's what you did with this trip.
And that's totally true. But then Jim comes back at Andy and says that, like, look, you don't have to prove yourself.
Andy, this whole idea of our situation being just like war, it's just not true. We just work at a paper company, and you're our regional manager. And guess what, man? You don't have to prove anything. We like you as regional manager. And if you don't believe me, take a look at what's on my head.
And this is something that we've been discussing through these episodes with Andy as manager, and that like he's constantly trying to prove himself. Mm-hmm. And yet everyone in the office is like, You're cool. You don't have to do this. It's okay. You know, we're okay with you being manager. We like you. It's okay. And I think finally this is the time where Jim says that to Andy. You know, he spells it out very clearly that this isn't like Andy doesn't need to come up with all these gimmicks in order to prove himself as a good leader and a good manager. They already like him and it's enough.
Yeah.
And this is like a really good eye-opening moment for Andy. And I think that what we find at the end is like, even though the trip didn't go as Andy planned, it ended up being a success anyway, because everyone felt more united, or at least Andy feels that everyone mm-hmm. is more united yeah. because Andy was the one who was feeling on the outs, really.
The world will little note nor long remember the fight that Jim and I had here at Gettysburg. And that's good, because I was basically wrong.
I wanted my team to be like this army, and I was their general. But I guess it's really just more like they're people who work in an office, and I'm their manager. Yeah, that's really probably a better analogy, now that I think about it.
And I think it's important that it came from Jim. I mean, Andy has known Jim the longest, right? Because Jim went to Stanford.
Right.
And I really like it. I'd forgotten that this was in this episode, but it is sort of like part two of the conversation they had back outside of that tattoo shop, right? And Jim building Andy up is just something that I really like the storyline. And I think Jim is kind of the only person who can do it, because I think that Andy looks at Jim as a guy who has his life together in a bunch of ways that Andy doesn't or maybe can't. And I really like the exchange. I like that Daryl's there, because Daryl and Andy are also close. I just think it's really nice.
And this just kind of came to me now, in that the idea of, we've already seen Jim reassure Andy. We've already seen like this kind of idea of Andy isn't sure how to lead. He wants to be reaffirmed. The same thing with the garden party, right? Like, he tries this elaborate thing, and yet he gets the acceptance at the end because everyone kind of realizes like what Andy's actually trying to do mm-hmm. In this, you know, more extreme way, but they still realize it and they're there to support him. And you would think like one plot line like this would be enough, because usually most TV shows or most like movies, you know, the character has like this big revelation or something. If like one good thing happens to them and they get reassured once, and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But in real life, sometimes people need more reassurance than that.
Yeah.
Like, one time isn't enough. Like, that's not just like, okay, one and done. You're good to go now, right?
Yeah.
You have confidence and, you know, you're off on the world and you're like, you know, a big success now. It doesn't really work like that. Like, you need to build up confidence multiple times and keep reassuring people. Like, that's kind of like being a good friend and being in a good relationship is like, you can't just do it once and say you're done. You have to keep being there for the person because, I mean, Andy's competing with a full lifetime of basic like rejection and being, you know, downgraded by his parents. And it's really hard to undo that with like one nice afternoon. Mm-hmm. And so we get to see it a bunch of times with Andy. Like, we're building him up in these episodes more and more. And I actually like that they're continuing to do that. And it's not just an easy fix.
Especially when you work for somebody like Robert California, I feel like it's going to take more than once to find your footing.
He definitely leaves people...
unsettled.
Yes, unsettled. Yeah. It's the perfect way. In addition to like that main thing in Gettysburg with Andy's revelation and Jim's reassurance of his management, there is a competition going on that Dwight is insisting that Gettysburg is not the northernmost battle, even though it's actually not. But there was a battle of Shroot Farms that he's insisting was a historical fact, and no one believes him because no one's heard of it. So we have this back and forth between Dwight and Mr. Well, actually himself, Oscar, debating about this this battle of Shroot Farms. And I love the reveal of like what comes out of this.
Yeah, it's not even that people haven't heard of it. It's that the Gettysburg Industrial Complex is working against Dwight to keep their prestigious place in history.
The Civil War history industry has conveniently forgotten about the Battle of Shroot Farms.
So they argue about it kind of throughout the episode.
I'm telling the truth.
Interesting.
Yes, thank you. All of history has been whitewashed.
Really? Why don't you tell us the real history, Gore Vidal?
Okay, I will. I don't know who that is, but I'm going to tell you this.
He's a historian.
Gettysburg was very important. Credit where credit is due, okay? Big mad props to Gettysburg. Was it, however, the most northern battle of the Civil War? Not yes, by yes, a long shot!
Yes,
no!
Yes!
No, it was not! No, it was not!
At one point, they're talking to, like, a park ranger, and he's like, oh, I've never heard of Shroot Farms.
Actually,
excuse me, I got a question for you. Can you tell us about the Battle of Shroot Farms?
Oh, I haven't heard of that one.
Really? Okay, follow-up question. How much are they paying you to keep your mouth shut?
I apologize for my friend and for the Republicans who are cutting your funding.
But then, later on, and it looks like maybe they're in the visitor center at the end of the day, Oscar has found a historian who is going to set the record straight. You know, it's this third-party, impartial person who can tell us the truth. And so they go into this little like office, and the guy has a video he plays about the Battle of Shroot Farms, and not really a battle. So it turns out, according to this historian, that Shroot Farms was used as a place by pacifists from both sides, and they sort of built Shroot Farms into this artistic like commune of people living together, creating together. And Dwight is not in love with the idea.
I like to think of Shroot Farm as the underground railroad for the sensitive and, well, fabulous.
Put that on a t-shirt, Dwight.
Shroot Farm. I would wear that t-shirt. That's fantastic.
Oscar now agrees that more people should know about this, but Dwight storms out.
I don't think Dwight is upset about what it actually was. I think Dwight is upset that he was wrong.
Yes.
But Oscar is just absolutely thrilled. It's an even better conclusion than he could have possibly imagined.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, this is so much better than the story you made up.
Seen enough.
You're right, there should be a monument to this.
We also have Gabe has a little bit of a through line here as well.
I love this because it's such a visual gag, and it actually is very funny to me.
He looks like Abraham Lincoln, and it stops him from visiting places he wants to go.
Apparently, I bear a passing resemblance to Abraham Lincoln. Makes it kind of hard for me to go to places like museums, historical monuments, elementary schools. I don't see it.
But at Gettysburg, it's obviously the worst. And someone thinks that he is, the Abraham Lincoln character. I wrote in my notes that he's Gabraham Lincoln.
Oh, wow, that's good. Oh. Well, I got a slow clap.
So I've
slow clap for you. That's a good one.
I've done my work for the week.
That was the peak of your career.
Wow. All downhill.
I mean, yeah.
But he goes along with it. He ends up like talking in front of this crowd of tourists.
Chelsea, give Mr. Lincoln your hat so I can take a picture.
Okay. Quick.
Hey, Lincoln's starting.
Oh, no. I'm actually with a tour group myself, so. Hello, I'm Abraham Lincoln. Some people call me the Great Emancipator, but you might know me from the penny.
I didn't notice there's a park ranger in the back, so I guess he's also intrigued about who this person is. And then, of course, it ends with Abraham Lincoln going to the play and it ending badly, and then Gabe just runs away.
He knows a lot about Lincoln.
Well, if you look just like the guy, you might as well.
Well, I like the backstory, the idea that he has gotten into this situation so many times that he just said, I might as well learn everything about Abraham Lincoln just in case I find myself in this situation again and I can't find my way out. And so he's prepared and he tells the whole story with like a real like reenactment. He's doing well. And that's where he is for most of the tour. He is off doing his Abraham Lincoln moment. Mm-hmm. Lincoln starting. So everyone over at Gettysburg found new parts of themselves, I guess.
Yeah.
It was a revelation for many.
There you go. And Robert California learned a lot about cookies.
He did. It was all about cookies all along. So that brings us to the end of the episode, and you can join us next week for when we talk about the next episode, Season 8, Episode 9, Mrs. California. And until then, be sure to go and follow us over on Twitter at @tall_beats, and you can find us individually at ISMH and at Tiff Arment. You can subscribe to become a member over at The Incomparable and get fun goodies at the end of the year, access to our members-only bonus feed, you get access to bootleg episodes of some of the shows, and you can also join us in the conference room, our members-only Slack. Well, I think you need to have a trip to Pennsylvania pretty soon, because, I mean, if anything, this episode really highlights how exciting it really is.
Seems exciting. I can learn about Abraham Lincoln by a tall man who works at a paper company.
You can only hope.
Families and sweethearts back home waited desperately for letters from the front.
Dearest mother, I'm sorry it has been so long since my last letter. It is 3 months since I arrived at Shroot Farms, and I fear I may never leave this place alive. Melvin Pfeiffer Garris.
Hallowed ground.
But the battle at Shroot Farms was no battle at all. It was a code used by pacifists from both North and South who turned the Pennsylvania farmhouse into an artistic community and a refuge from the war.
You have to understand, poets, artists, dancers, these kinds of men preferred peace to war. These delicate, lovely men found a place of refuge among the Shroots at Shroot Farm. Amidst the macho brutality of war, this was a place where dandies and dreamers could put on plays, sing tender ballads, and dance in the moonlight. I like to think of Shroot Farm as the underground railroad for the sensitive and, well, fabulous.
Wow, this is so much better than the story you made up.
Seen enough.
You're right, there should be a monument to this.